This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
So the purpose that we kind of had for today was we wanted to learn and gain greater respect for different age groups. Often we've found a bit of ageism between different ages in the queer community. And so we've asked the speakers to talk about what stereotypes they have of different age groups, what stereotypes they think other age groups have of their age group, and what their gender and sexual orientation means to them. So that's kind of the idea of what we're going into this for. And our goal is to kind of just honour the differences in those different age groups. So kind of as a group, I guess we're all kind of working towards that today. And that's it, yeah.
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 We
gotta
sing.
Wahine, wahine. Let me tell you how I feel. You have given me all your riches, and I love you so.
So we, just so you know, we each chose a speaker, or each asked somebody to speak. So we're going to start with the speaker for 50 plus, which is Irene McLeod.
Okay, 50 plus. Well, I'm 69. On the radio this morning, I don't know if you heard it, Lauren Lysat, who used to call herself Lauren Lethal, was talking about coming out in the 80s, and she said she came out as an angry lesbian feminist. I thought, was I an angry lesbian feminist in the 80s? And something I read just before that was a British comedian in the late 90s who was talking about her mother and has her mother saying, this is the mother's voice, "Why do you have to go on that show and say you're queer or a dyke? Why couldn't you say you're a nice lesbian?" And I thought, I'm probably something between the two, between a nice lesbian and an angry lesbian feminist. I had my first lesbian relationship when I was 20. Makes it 1960. And for about the first 15 years, I was closet. We were all closet. I went out with men. I slept with men. Usually little wimpy men, but men. And it was really only when the women's movement came along, when feminism came along, and kind of in New Zealand, that was the sort of mid-70s when it started really infiltrating here, that it became possible to come out. And coming out, I sort of thought, what does it mean being a lesbian? And I think a lot of us thought that. We'd been hidden the whole time, we'd been secretive the whole time, we knew that being a lesbian meant being sexually attracted to women, having women as the primary focus of your sexuality. And then we thought, well, being women identified, which is what the feminist movement suggested we were, what does it actually mean? And we thought about and talked a lot about lesbian identity. Did it mean more than sex, what we did in bed, or on the way to bed, or... so it always seems a bit silly to say what you do when you're sleeping with someone. It's not really sleeping with someone, is it? And certainly the group of lesbians I kind of identified with spent a lot of time in workshops, in counselling groups, co-counselling, lesbian therapy, self-help therapy groups. It was brilliant, actually. It was all free. It was part of the whole feminist self-analysis. And we thought, what are we as lesbians? Who are we as lesbians? Why are we lesbians? And this is only some of us, because a lot of my friends who'd been the secretive lesbians before with me identified as gay ladies. And gay ladies did not go to therapy groups, and gay ladies were not feminists. Gay ladies still went to the bars and played pool and lived their own lives in the suburbs in happy couples. So a lot of the women I knew didn't identify as feminist. As well as all the therapy groups. Oh, and of course the most important one, I think, for me was, I hope she'd be here today, but she's not, was Ruth Jackson, some of you might know, as a counsellor now, who ran lesbian counselling groups. And the kind of point of that was that we were hoping we had a community. And if we were a community, how were we going to operate in that community? So it was very much a sense of how would you help the people who were having difficulty coming out? How would you help the people who are having difficulties in that community? And Ruth Jackson ran two lesbian counselling sessions, which I thought were brilliant. And as well as that, of course, we read books. And of course, I've got this big pile of books here because I spent 37 years of my working life teaching literature at the university. And books give me a great sense of security, so I usually always bring a pile of them along with me. But books like this one, Joanne Lulan's Lesbian Sex, which came out in 1984, I think, and was followed by her Lesbian Passion, which came out in 1987. You sort of say, perhaps some of the younger ones might say, you don't really need to learn how to do it, Lesbian Sex, Lesbian Passion. But Lesbian Ethics Towards New Values, and I think that was kind of the centre of it. What did it mean being a lesbian? Did we operate in different ways? Feminism had said that traditional, well, conservative heterosexual relationships based on, you know, power dynamics, based on sexual stereotypes, were to be questioned. And so you're saying, what, you know, do lesbians operate in a different way? Lesbian ethics. Actually, I took all these off my bookshelf, and when I took them off, it's 20 years of dust was sitting on them. So this is what we read then. Lesbian Couples, Creating Healthy Relationships for the 90s. And I guess this is the thing, that if we weren't being heterosexual couples, what were we being? And I think we thought it was going to be idyllic. You know, two women, women's passion, women understanding one another. And of course, as probably most of us know, it didn't work out like that at all. So Lesbian Couples, Creating Healthy Relationships. And of course, a lot of the lesbian counsellors at the time were actually couple counsellors as well. Not Lesbian Psychologies, Explorations and Challenges, The Lesbian Reader, which started off as sort of coming out, and How to Make Love to a Woman if You're a Woman. What Is She Like? Lesbian Identities from the 50s to the 90s. The Significance of Being Lesbian, and The Great Big Lesbian Culture, an anthology. Because lesbian culture, what was lesbian culture? That was very dusty, actually. Actually, I was just thinking when I said Joanne Lulan's Lesbian Sex, and she was one of the, what do you say, the role models for us in the 80s. And then in the mid-90s, she came out as sleeping with a man or having a man as a partner. Well, we were really upset about that. We said, she's a traitor, I think we said. You know, how could she be sleeping with a man if she's the lesbian role model? And the thing that she said as well was, it's not that I'm bi. She said, I'm not bisexual. I haven't gone straight. I'm a lesbian who sleeps with a man. I guess this is the mid-90s, and it's a time when we were actually then being asked to query those kind of, not quite absolutes we'd set up, but the attitudes that we'd seen as being essentially lesbian. That is, you don't wear makeup, you don't wear high heels. These are things that stereotype females do. You can probably think of other things too. SM was highly suspect. Sleeping around was highly suspect. And certainly being bi was I think, pretty suspect in the rather sort of lesbian security, I guess, that we'd set up in the 80s. It was, I think, if you came from a attitude or came from a place which had been denied, where you'd been hidden, where you'd been what would be, I think I noted some of the terms. Marginalised, denied, prohibited. If you came from that place, it seemed very important to set up some sense of security. You know, this is what a lesbian is. This is how we can all belong to the same community. But, of course, by the 90s, we began realising that although, say, in the therapy groups you saw similarities, you also saw the differences, and a lot of differences. And I think now we'd happily accept probably what Joanne Luan said, that she is a lesbian who slept with a man. But then that was abhorrent. Was there anything else I was going to say about that? The other thing I wanted to talk briefly about was the fact that being a teacher at the university, and I taught classes in women's writing, and in the 80s, when I introduced the class, I would say to the students, and usually there were students about, at that stage, about 80 to 100 odd students, I'd say, we all read from different subject positions. I don't expect you to read like me. I'd say I read like a, then probably be a 55-year-old, a Pākehā, a woman, and fairly well educated, and somewhere in there I'd throw in and a lesbian. In the 80s, the students who were lesbian really liked this. You know, they kept journals as their coursework, and they'd write in the journals, you know, it's really great that she comes out. It's really great to hear the word lesbian being spoken out on a platform. And I think a lot of called baby dykes came out in that class, or partly because of that class. But I noticed the change that by the time we got to the 90s, they'd be writing things in their journal like, why does she feel it necessary to label herself? So it's kind of stopped. Wondered whether I didn't stop. I kept saying lesbian, and the students themselves often weren't calling themselves lesbian any longer. This is by the late 90s. They were calling themselves queer. You know, queer is a more inclusive term, which could include gay men, bis, any sort of sexuality which was, I guess you'd say, transgressive in the conventional sense. And then it went one step further. This is the early this century, when bi became very fashionable. And a lot of students said they were bi. And this wasn't necessarily actually lesbian students or straight students. It was both. I remember, in fact, Fran, my partner's daughter, who's as straight as they come, I think, who called herself bi. and another lesbian friend who called herself bi. And neither of those were actually having any sort of anything like sex with either, in the case of Brown's daughter, either a woman, or in the case of the lesbian friend, with a man. But bi just meant you weren't going to be labelled. Bi meant you had the possibility of sleeping with someone of the opposite sex. So bi became very, I think, very fashionable. And then 2005, I retired. So I'm not quite sure what happened after 2005. But one thing I was certainly very aware of was the younger students thinking of, I remember one of them saying to me in tutorial, I was very uncertain, she said, about coming to this class because I'd heard that you were a 70s feminist. This was in the 90s. And so it was actually quite useful because we talked about... Do you have a glass of water? It's a pretty dry mouth. We talked about what was a 70s feminist and what was a 90s feminist. She didn't actually say, I heard you were a 70s lesbian feminist, but I heard you were a 70s feminist. So there was very much that idea that 70s feminists, and so lesbian feminists, were kind of rigid in their beliefs. I guess this is the... I suppose I felt that they would expect of me that I'd be rigid in my ideas, that I'd only have one way of seeing things. Thinking about now, I came across this in the business news. I'll stop. Yesterday. Was it yesterday or Friday? The Business Herald, of all places. Some of you might have seen this. or heard about the event that caused it. And it was titled, "He Doesn't Speak Lezo." No. One news anchor, Simon Dallow, apparently stepped over a line with his TV bosses after his media comment about his wife, Alison, was it Mel? Mo?
Mel?
Mel? Mel? And her same-sex partner, Carlene Edmonds. Dallow was photographed enjoying convivial company at a commercial promotional launch and was asked by the Herald on Sunday gossip columnist about Mole. He replied, "I don't speak lezo," which is rather an odd thing for the main news anchor for public television to say. TVNZ spokeswoman Andy Bretherston said, "TV New Zealand has dealt with Simon about this. It was handled earlier than the week." But she would not discuss TVNZ's view about Dallow's transgression. Once closely protected by network bosses who saw news anchors as representing the brand, TVNZ has taken an increasingly laissez-faire approach to Dallow and his social life on the celebrity circuit and in social pages since his breakup with Moe. "I don't speak lezo" will be offensive to some, but it's hardly shocking. Maybe it fits with TVNZ's apparently wishing to promote its news to swinging singles. I find the end of that quite confusing. I think the suggestion is that the media sees being a lesbian, or speaking lezo, I suppose, as somehow involved with being a swinging single. And I think this is probably part of the recent sort of media sort of promotion, I guess, of lesbianism, bisexuality. As long as you're attractive, beautiful, a celebrity, talented, Anika Moa, rich or famous, or Ellen DeGeneres, I guess, that it's okay, it's cool. That it's cool to be a lesbian. It's cool to be... I think the Ellen DeGeneres, I don't know how many of you have caught her programme, but it comes on just before the news, so I always seem to catch the end of it when I go to... soon to the news, and she is set up as a classic butch dyke if there ever was one. I mean, you know, she wears jeans and trainers and a beautifully cut jacket and a butch hairdo, and all the attractive women in the audience are all clapping. So on one level, I guess there's a what do you call speaking lezo is a I said a cool thing to be, no. But.
Excuse me, Aru, can I just add there, did you see her mum? When her mum came on, her mum was 87.
Is this Ellen DeGeneres?
Yes.
Oh.
Her mum was exactly the same. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Okay.
She was lovely.
Supporting her daughter.
Cool, so I've chosen Jules to be the guest speaker for the 30 to 50 age group.
Sometimes I'm concerned about the lack of knowledge of our struggle and little things like the recent Metro article where it interviewed a few younger women, and they really illuminated that for me in their sentiments, anti-sentiments around butch and femme. You know, and I wanted every young person in New Zealand to have, you know, read Stone Butch Blues mm-hmm. in their schools. It's kind of heartbreaking. So moving on to assumptions that I have about over 50, well, as someone said over there, pioneers, phenomenal people who were subjected to horrific discriminations and abuse. You know, electric shock treatment, terrible family abandonment, couldn't access housing, health and employment. You know, they're amazing women. I do sometimes find them more rigid in their thinking. Of course, we're perfect at 30 to 50. And I think labels are often still important, and I understand that because it makes sense of our world and maybe it helps us make sense of others. I've come across quite a bit of phobia, particularly biphobia and transphobia. And what I also find is that these women are still politically active. They're stunning. They're organising for our her stories, like today, our health and our rights. And so in terms of the labels I use, it's not a straightforward question for me. I adore some names and labels. I adore dyke. I love it. but in the strictest sense, but in the strictest sense, it may not describe my sexuality. Annalise and I have been together for 6 years. We're civil union. I stand back on the left. we civil unionised over 2 years ago, and we're life committed partners. And Annalise doesn't really like me saying this, but if she was to die, which is understandable, I may again have relationships with men. So is my sexuality bi, lesbian? You know, I don't really care, to be honest. And that's interesting, it's not very important to me, but once upon a time it really was. I wanted a place to belong. And maybe my commitment to Annalise supersedes those questions for me. But it does come to why I love the label queer, because it does embrace my sexuality and my gender. I identify as female and I identify as a woman. I have not and still often don't fit into societal expectations of those. My gender wars started pretty early. My father was conservative and a farmer of several generations. And I'd go and stay there in the summer, and my parents were divorced, and Dad would expect me to work in the kitchen for the men. And of course, these beautiful summer days, I wanted to work outside. We never did reconcile, it all budge on those. I love being a woman, and I consider myself strong and determined and passionate, but these are not the domain alone of femininity or masculinity. I'm also child-free by choice, which I think is still a significant choice. Motherhood is pretty pervasive, it's still a must-do in our society. And increasingly, I find it's been almost elevated to having children as next to godliness. So just to finish off, what assumptions and beliefs do I believe other groups have of 30 to 50-year-olds? Well, to a certain extent, being under 30, 30s may not differentiate significantly between 40s and 50s, because let's face it, we are all old. I hope they are seeing more diversity. I think they're a little bit mystified by our need to label ourselves. I'd like to think they see community, and even if they, some of them have no desire to belong to it. And the over 50s, I think, I imagine they look at us and go, how lucky you are, comparatively. How so many more rights and protections and legislation in a society where queer really is here. But as you know, I believe we still have so far to go. So thanks to the Charlotte Museum, and thanks, Ali, for inviting me along, to allow me to contribute. Thank you.
I've asked Phoebe to come and talk today, and she's a member of Rainbow Youth.
I've grew up in a lesbian community. My mums are both gay. They were together and had me out by a sperm donor. So I've always been surrounded by, I wouldn't say radical feminist lesbians exactly, but people from that era. And so I think my prejudices or stereotypes against those people are very different from maybe other people my age. So I can only speak for myself. So something I picked up just coming here today, just two things that I noticed was, one, that me and Georgia seem to be the only young lesbians in that under 30 bracket. And I think that sort of illuminates one of the stereotypes I feel that older people might have towards us, is that we're not interested. I know I am. You know, I'm quite politically active. I was at the youth parliament stuff. But I think you're right in saying that there's no longer, we don't feel the need for a united lesbian movement. We don't need to be politically active like as a community. And I think it's actually really sad that we don't have that, so much that tight-knit community that from all the stories I've heard throughout my life were around in 60s, 70s, 80s. And the other thing was a comment. I do knitting. an interesting a comment that you made. I'm not sure, Enif, sorry. And you said, oh, you know, that's the trend now. I hear, and I sort of, I don't want to. I don't knit because it's a trend. I think that might be another thing you. Older people might have is that they is that you see us as quite superficial and maybe fit, you know, is this fair? Yeah. I mean, because I'm probably more an old lesbian than a young lesbian myself in terms of how I, you know, my belief system and how I act and things, and I agree. I think a lot of people, I see a lot of youth today as really superficial. And I, sorry, I'm glad there's no one, you know, not too many people here.
It'll get around.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I don't know why that is. I mean, I guess it's the impression I get is that people, youth in general, not just, you know, queer youth, don't feel... I don't know about that. Moving on. it's a hard one to... I was trying to think through this last night doing my knitting and, you know, didn't... Yeah, it's a hard one. But in terms of stereotypes, I think we, trying to be representative of my age group, have of older people, I see them as, like, I would be more inclined to talk to an older person than a younger person about personal things, about my personal life, because I think that they have so much more understanding, and I think a lot of that comes from the experiences they've had in the political arena and, you know, all the fighting that, in the stories of these, you know, actions that... I heard one about, one of my mums was telling me that she dressed up with a group of women from her sort of radical lesbian group and went and sang pretending to be prostitutes at the bar where American sailors were staying who were to do with the nuclear free. And they were singing that song, I'm not sure what the actual song was, but her lyrics are something like, it's raining shit in the ocean, it's raining shit in the sea, going along this line, you know, a great song, something to do with the walls of Texas. So they rewrote this song and sang the new version to these brawny American sailors and then ran out. So it's, and with the police sirens, you know, wailing in their wake. And it's those stories I've been raised on, and the comparison to today, when I see, you know, a weekend activity for young people is going out and getting drunk, which is another big beef with me, is just really, really depressing for me. Yeah, what else? What?
Sexual.
Oh, I've got, when someone, if I'm in a situation where I'm coming out to someone, I usually use the term gay, not lesbian. And I think that comes from there being a lot of stereotypes around the word lesbian. And although I think those stereotypes have changed a lot from, you know, often those visual stereotypes. And I think that arose from the feeling the need to make yourself visible. So, you know, short hair, I had short hair. But yeah, things like that, short hair and... jeans, okay. Not working out for me right now, but so you, I mean, everyone knows what those stereotypes are. And I've lost my train of thought. Yes. And even though maybe today, I think with a lot of the media around the sort of movies and things, lesbians have a different. There are different stereotypes, like really glossed up women who have sex everywhere with each other. I don't know, you know. But whatever these are, you've seen some of the films. But whatever it is, I don't feel that that's me at all. I don't think I do fit into many of those stereotypes. I use gay as a more sort of inclusive term, but not so much because I'm politically aware of, you know, that other people need to be included, but just because I don't feel that it's fair for people to associate me with those stereotypes and treat, you know, stereotype me because of my sexuality. And gender, I think there's a lot more stigma around gender than just sexuality. And that's sort of the next battle the LGBT community has to face, as well as bisexuality. That's another big issue. Yeah, I mean... I'm comfortable in my gender, but I think Like, I've been filling out a lot of university scholarship applications recently, and I something twigs in my, you know, in me when I see boxes, female, male, and that really annoys me because I've got, you know, lots of trans friends, and yeah, just sort of, there's still so many problems in society that we need to look at. Yeah, that's it.
Cool. Thanks, baby.